From NPR News, this is a special report. I'm Linda Wertheimer. Senator Edward Kennedy died late Tuesday night at his home in Hyannisport. The patriarch of one of America's most famous and powerful political families was 77 years old. His health had declined since he first became ill with what was diagnosed as a malignant brain tumor. Senator Kennedy's family has announced that he will lie in repose at the John F. Kennedy Presidential Library. There will be a funeral mass on Saturday at Our Lady of Perpetual Help Basilica on Tremont Street in Boston, and the senator's body will be flown to Washington for burial that same afternoon at Arlington Cemetery near his brother's graves. Edward Moore Kennedy was born in Boston on February 22, 1932. He was the ninth child and fourth son of Rose Fitzgerald Kennedy and Joseph P. Kennedy. His maternal grandfather had served in Congress and had been mayor of Boston. His father had been a real estate developer, movie producer, reputedly a bootlegger during Prohibition, chairman of the Securities and Exchange Commission, ambassador to Great Britain, and the driving force behind a family that over the generations produced a president of the United States, three U.S. senators, House members, and leaders in public service, environmental protection, business, and media. A child of wealth and privilege, family and political leadership fell to Edward Kennedy through tragedy, as NPR's Brian Naylor reports in this look back at the life of the senior senator from Massachusetts.
Senator Edward Kennedy was the last surviving son of Joseph and Rose, the patriarch and matriarch of the storied Kennedy clan. His eldest brother, Joe, died in a high-risk bombing mission in World War II. His brothers, John and Robert, were killed by assassins' bullets. Edward, known by pretty much everyone as Ted, had an early brush with death of his own, surviving a 1964 plane crash that broke his back and left him with a limp. Ted Kennedy was elected to the Senate in 1962 to fill out his brother John's term. The seat had been held 2 years by a family friend until the youngest Kennedy reached the constitutional age of 30 to run on his own. His status in the family dynasty won him quick attention in Washington, including an appearance on NBC's Meet the Press.
If I'm not mistaken, your brother, the President of the United States, has taken a contrary view that federal aid to parochial schools is unconstitutional. I wonder if you'd discuss that for a moment.
Well, I'm delighted to express my opinion, Mr. Klorman.
Is it fair to say, then, that you're in disagreement with the President?
No, you have to make that assertion. I'm delighted to answer in any way that I possibly can any question which you might direct on my position on aid to education.
The 60s were a time of deep tragedy for Ted Kennedy, the assassination of John in 1963 and Robert in 1968. Ted Kennedy eulogized Bobby at St. Patrick's Cathedral in New York.
My brother need not be idealized or enlarged in death beyond what he was in life. To be remembered simply as a good and decent man who saw wrong and tried to right it, saw suffering and tried to heal it, saw war and tried to stop it.
An effort to draft the youngest Kennedy for the White House was short-lived at the Democratic Convention of 1968, and his presidential aspirations were dealt a blow a year later when, in July of 1969, his car went off a small bridge on the Massachusetts island of Chappaquiddick. Kennedy swam to safety, leaving behind the young woman who was a passenger in his car. The woman, Mary Jo Kopechne, a campaign worker, drowned. Kennedy later called his actions indefensible. He was found guilty of leaving the scene of an accident, but his sentence was suspended, and he remained popular in Massachusetts, where he was reelected to the Senate the next year. In 1980, Kennedy finally did run for president, challenging the Democratic incumbent, Jimmy Carter. It was a difficult time for the nation. Gas prices, unemployment, and interest rates were all high, and Americans were being held hostage in Iran. But Kennedy had trouble articulating his reasons for running, famously stumbling in an interview with broadcaster Roger Mudd.
Why do you want to be president?
Well, I'm... Were I to make the announcement and to run, the reasons that I would run is because I have a great belief in this country that it is, has more natural resources than any nation of the world, has the greatest educated population in the world, the greatest technology of any country in the world, the greatest capacity for innovation in the world, and the greatest political system in the world.
But while he came up short as a presidential candidate, Ted Kennedy became an icon in the Senate. He served 46 years, longer than anyone in history but Robert Byrd and Strom Thurmond. He was the chamber's leading liberal voice and immersed himself particularly in health care and labor issues. Among the legislation he helped pass were the Family and Medical Leave Act, the Women, Infants, and Children Nutrition Program, job training programs, and AmeriCorps. Earlier, he chaired the Judiciary Committee, where he defended abortion rights and helped lead the opposition to President Reagan's nomination of Judge Robert Bork to the Supreme Court. Later, in a 2005 NPR interview, he railed against attempts by congressional Republicans to amend the Constitution.
We're going to do a constitutional amendment on flag burning. Flag burning, that's a problem for working families that are concerned about gas prices, that are concerned about the prescription drug program, that are concerned about the cost of tuition as they're looking for their kids going to college, concerned about their jobs, concerned about the collapse of our pension system. Flag burning.
In 2001, Kennedy worked with President George W. Bush on the No Child Left Behind education bill, but he and the president soon parted ways. Kennedy was an early opponent of the war in Iraq, voting against the 2002 resolution authorizing U.S. troops and calling it George Bush's Vietnam. He also opposed Mr. Bush's tax cuts and his Supreme Court nominees, John Roberts and Samuel Alito. Yet as partisan as he could be, Kennedy was also known for his partnerships and friendships he forged with Senate Republicans, Utah's Orrin Hatch, Sam Brownback of Kansas, Mike Enzi of Wyoming, and John McCain of Arizona. The immigration bill Kennedy and McCain co-sponsored failed in 2007, despite another Kennedy trademark, his thunderous oratory on the Senate floor.
It was in this chamber a number of years ago that we knocked down the great walls of discrimination on the basis of race, that we knocked down the walls of discrimination on the basis of religion. Here in the Senate, we were part of the March for Progress, and today we are called on again.
While Kennedy made just one run for the presidency himself, he was an influential voice in National Party politics. In 2004, he campaigned extensively for fellow Massachusetts Democrat John Kerry's bid for the party's nomination and helped steer the Democratic convention to Boston. In 2008, he made a key and somewhat surprising endorsement of then-candidate Barack Obama.
I'll support the candidate who inspires me, who inspires all of us, who can lift our vision and summon our hopes and renew our belief that our country's best days are still to come. I found that candidate, and I think you have too.
In the 1960s, Hubert Humphrey was dubbed the Happy Warrior for his exuberant campaigning, but the nickname would have fit Ted Kennedy as well. He was passionate about his beliefs, a tireless worker for his causes, and he loved fighting the good fight. In 1980, after Jimmy Carter was renominated for president, Kennedy addressed the Democratic convention. He was talking about his campaign, but his words are an apt summation of his life.
For me, a few hours ago, this campaign came to an end. For all those whose cares have been our concern, the work goes on, the cause endures, the hope still lives, and the dream shall never die.
Brian Naylor, NPR News, Washington.
After his failed effort to win the Democratic presidential nomination in 1980, Edward Kennedy served almost three more decades in the United States Senate. But through the administrations of Ronald Reagan, George H.W. Bush, Bill Clinton, and George W. Bush, Kennedy's message remained one of hope and expectation that America could fulfill its greatest ambitions and meet its loftiest ideals. Last summer, Kennedy spoke at the Democratic National Convention in Denver. The lion of the Senate and of the Democratic Party echoed the words he spoke when he abandoned his 1980 bid for the Oval Office and passed the torch of hope and aspiration to a young senator from Illinois.
We are told that Barack Obama believes too much in an America of high principle and bold endeavor. But when John Kennedy thought of going to the moon, he didn't say, it's too far to get there. We shouldn't even try. Our people answered his call and rose to the challenge. And today, an American flag still marks the surface of the moon. Yes, we are all Americans. This is what we do. We reach the moon. We scale the heights. I know it. I've seen it. I've lived it. And we can do it again. There is a new wave of change all around us. And if we set our compass true, we will reach our destination. Not merely victory for our party, but renewal for our nation. And this November, the torch will be passed again to a new generation of Americans. So with Barack Obama, and for you, and for me, our country will be committed to his cause. The work begins anew. The hope rises again, and the dream lives on.
Senator Edward M. Kennedy of Massachusetts speaking at the Democratic National Convention in Denver last year. Senator Kennedy died late Tuesday at his home on Cape Cod. He was 77 years old. You're listening to a special report from NPR News. From NPR News, this is a special report on the life of Senator Edward Kennedy. I'm Linda Wertheimer. Senator Kennedy, who died on Tuesday night, was the youngest of the Kennedy brothers and the only one who lived to see his children grown. One of the many roles that history handed to him was to watch over his brothers' fatherless children and to foster their versions of the family ambitions. He helped them run for office, he walked his brothers' daughters down the aisles on their wedding days, and he served as a substitute grandfather for their children, showing up at first communions and graduations, calling them on their birthdays, taking them sailing off the family compound in Hyannisport. He also served as the family's eulogist, first for brother Bobby, and then for other members of the family, notably his sister-in-law Jackie, the president's widow, and then the president's son and namesake, John Kennedy Jr. But although there were many tragic moments in Senator Kennedy's life, there were many triumphant moments as well. During the more than 46 years he represented Massachusetts in the Senate, Senator Kennedy played a leading role in much of that period's landmark legislation on civil rights, health care, education, and aid for impoverished mothers and children. For both his tenacity and his booming advocacy, Kennedy was known as the Lion of the Senate. NPR's David Wellner has this report on how Kennedy earned that title.
The breadth and depth of Ted Kennedy's long Senate career came into sharp focus one day in late May 2008. It was the day his fellow senators learned he had brain cancer. One by one, Republicans as well as Democrats rose to praise their stricken colleague. Among them was an old friend of Kennedy's, Virginia Republican John Warner.
How many times have we been privileged in this chamber to listen to our colleagues speak from that back row? He really doesn't need the microphone. His voice resonates the rafters in the chair in this chamber, and it carries forth.
Indeed, 6 months earlier, Kennedy had rumbled the rafters of the Senate chamber, arguing for troop withdrawals from Iraq, while at the same time comparing the cost of that war to education causes he'd long championed.
Just think of this, that for every month this goes on, Mr. President, we could provide Head Start for every young person that needs it. And just think of this, Mr. President, for two of those 5 years, if we had the resources for two of those 5 years, we could have rebuilt every public school in this country. Doesn't that matter?
It was a classic Kennedy floor speech, brimming with righteous outrage and taking direct aim at his colleagues' consciences. Here's Majority Leader Harry Reid the day Kennedy's illness became public.
We've heard this lion roar on the Senate floor on so many occasions. His work ethic is unsurpassed.
Was all that roaring done for effect, or was it genuine? Connecticut Democrat Christopher Dodd, who's been one of Kennedy's closest friends in the Senate, says he's heard Kennedy roar when no one else was within earshot.
He roars anyway. He just likes roaring.
But in an interview before Kennedy's death, Dodd hastened to add that his old friend was also a master of subtle persuasion, a man willing to cross the aisle to make deals if that's what it took to move a bill forward.
He obviously is a very good legislator, understands the art of compromise, not on principles, and he's a person of deep passion, has been convictions, and so he brings that to the legislative process. Why, he's a good negotiator. If you don't come with some principles, you can concede too much and lose the ability to have a true impact on the outcome.
Kennedy's legislative legacy is vast. Much of it arose from his chairing for years the committee that oversees health, education, and labor. There was the Family and Medical Leave Act, the Children's Health Insurance Program, the Civil Rights Act, the Voting Rights Act, Medicare, the Americans with Disabilities Act, the Direct Student Loan Program, the National Teacher Corps, and to the consternation of many Democrats and teachers unions, the No Child Left Behind bill championed by President George W. Bush. 2 years ago, here's how the former president sized up his occasional ally.
Senator Kennedy is one of the best legislative senators there is. He can get the job done.
Kennedy joined forces once more with the former president in pushing for an immigration law overhaul 3 years ago. While President Bush touted the need for a guest worker program, Kennedy focused on millions of immigrants already in the U.S. illegally.
What are they going to do with the 12.5 million who are undocumented here? Send them back? Send them back to countries around the world? More than $250 billion, buses that would go from Los Angeles to New York and back again. Try and find them. Develop a type of Gestapo here to seek out these people that are in the shadows. That's their alternative? That's their alternative? This country and this Senate is better, Mr. President.
But when it came to the war in Iraq, the senator and the former president parted ways. Kennedy was among a minority of Senate Democrats who voted against authorizing that war, which he called a fraud cooked up in Texas. A year after the Iraq invasion, Kennedy railed against the former president's bid for re-election.
He's the problem, not the solution. Iraq is George Bush's Vietnam, and this country needs a new president.
The Senate seat Kennedy was first elected to had been held by his brother John before he was elected president. A half year after JFK's assassination, the younger Kennedy was asked in England how he'd been received as a 30-year-old freshman senator. His answer reveals a modest, almost shy deference to his Senate elders.
The members of the Senate were extremely kind and hospitable to me, extremely helpful, and I would hope that after a year in the Senate that I've been able to pull my share of the weight of the work there. I hope so.
Kennedy's initial posture in the Senate was to lie low. After 18 months on the job, he'd made only one floor speech. It was on civil rights, an issue he called dear to him and his recently slain brother. Former Iowa Democratic Senator John Culver served as an aide for Kennedy at the time. He recalls Kennedy being a quick study, both on how to get along and how to get things done in the Senate.
When he went in there, those older members really looked at him with great suspicion, if not cynicism, but he disabused them of that view and attitude, and quite early on they turned to respect and admire the way he accommodated himself to the rules of the Senate and the mores of the Senate, and that in turn enhanced his ability to get a lot of things done legislatively, and they were more inclined to work with him and respect him.
Culver says Kennedy's gift was to find common ground with would-be adversaries. Instead of simply hunkering down with fellow Democrats, he strived to form bipartisan alliances on key bills. He was an unabashed liberal who nonetheless had Republicans among his closest friends. Mitch McConnell is the leader of the Senate Republicans. Here's how McConnell described Kennedy the day his illness became known.
He is indeed one of the most important figures to ever serve in this body in our history. And Republican senators recognize that as well.
Ted Kennedy, in the end, was a man whose true home was the U.S. Senate. Like his two assassinated brothers, he too had sought the presidency. But he gave up that quest at the 1980 Democratic Convention in New York. It was there that Kennedy closed the curtains on Camelot and rededicated his life to truly become the lion of the Senate.
And may it be said of us, both in dark passages and in bright days, in the words of Tennyson that my brothers quoted and loved, and that have special meaning for me now, I am a part of all that I have met. Too much is taken, much abides. That which we are. One equal temper of heroic hearts, strong in will to strive, to seek, to find, and not to yield.
David Wellner, NPR News, The Capitol.
As David Wellner reports, Senator Kennedy matched his empathy for the poor and underprivileged with legislative skills and skills at negotiation that made him one of the most effective members of the Senate in the past half century. He worked with great constancy and substantial success on civil rights, for minorities, for women, for the disabled, and for immigrants. And over his long Senate career, Kennedy would assume an even more important role in framing the nation's civil rights laws and in leading the opposition to Supreme Court nominees he viewed as hostile to civil rights. NPR legal affairs correspondent Nina Totenberg has more on Kennedy's civil rights legacy.
Perhaps it was the Nina signs his grandfather told him about in Boston. No Irish need apply. Perhaps it was the moral legacy left unfinished by his assassinated brothers. Whatever the reason, Ted Kennedy long identified with those who are left out and left behind. Over the course of almost a half century in the Senate, Kennedy would lead the fight for enactment of a truly astonishing list of civil rights laws. The first battles came in 1965, when he fought to abolish the poll tax and, as chairman of the then obscure Immigration Subcommittee, rewrote the immigration laws to do away with the preference for Europeans, a move that effectively enabled Hispanics, Asians, and Africans to come to America. He did not always accomplish what he wanted to on the first try, often accepting a small piece, then returning to finish the job years or even decades later. And when the Supreme Court began interpreting laws to undercut civil rights protections, Kennedy stepped in to undo those decisions. In 1987, for example, after 3 years of work, Kennedy, overturning a Supreme Court decision and overriding a presidential veto, won passage of a law to ban federal funds to institutions that discriminate. 4 years later, he won passage of another civil rights law that reversed no fewer than 7 Supreme Court decisions and for the first time provided damages for the victims of discrimination. Ralph Neese worked with Kennedy first as a staffer for Republican senators and then as head of the Leadership Conference on Civil Rights.
I've never met or worked with anyone who knew the process better, the players better, the politics better, the substance better. No one puts it all together like Ted Kennedy. No one intuitively can feel the rhythms of the legislative process like Ted Kennedy.
And by all accounts, nobody worked harder either. Each night he would take home a heavy briefcase filled with notebooks and memos. The next morning, the staff would arrive at Kennedy's home at about 7 to find him sitting in his study with notebooks strewn about, pages marked up and dog-eared, and the senator primed for discussion. At night, he often would invite teams of scholars, experts, or advocates over for dinner, and the conversation would last late into the evening. Women's rights advocate Judith Lichtman.
By the time you left Senator Kennedy's house, he knew everything that you knew. He had truly drained your brain.
Ironically, Kennedy, a liberal lightning rod for conservative fundraisers, was in fact the quintessential consensus builder on legislation behind the scenes. When he was chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, his chief counsel would meet every day over breakfast with the Republican counsel to figure out the day's agenda and to make sure that senators from both parties knew what was going to happen and how each senator would react. Kennedy's guy was Stephen Breyer, now a justice on the U.S. Supreme Court.
Kennedy's idea throughout, he liked to get results. He is result-oriented. And he'd tell us, don't worry so much about credit. Credit is something where if you succeed, there will be plenty of credit to go around. And if you fail, who wants the credit?
Indeed, Kennedy's relations with Republicans were so good that he managed to beat back a filibuster and get Breyer confirmed for a Court of Appeals judgeship in 1980 after Ronald Reagan won the presidential election. He was a tireless and skilled negotiator, but even his good humor and patience had its limits. In 1989, for instance, after negotiating with key Republicans and Bush cabinet officials over the Americans with Disabilities Act, Kennedy faced his last obstacle, White House Chief of Staff John Sununu. With all the key players sitting at a long table, Sununu, apparently without provocation, lost his temper at the top staffer for the Disabilities Subcommittee, Bobby Silverstein.
Governor Sununu started screaming at the top of his lungs at me. And then Senator Kennedy started to turn red. And he just, at the top of his lungs, said to Governor Sununu, don't you ever, ever talk to staff that way. You want to yell, you have a position, you talk to me that way.
Kennedy's outburst changed the dynamic in the room, according to those who were there. Instead of being a group divided, they were a group united in admonition of Sununu. A deal was soon struck. If politics is the art of compromise, it is, on some occasions, also the willingness to fight in the face of overwhelming odds. It's hard to remember today, but when President Reagan nominated Judge Robert Bork to the U.S. Supreme Court, almost nobody thought the nomination could be defeated. Within hours, Kennedy went to the Senate floor to make a famous and controversial speech.
Robert Bork's America is a land in which women would be forced into back-alley abortions, blacks would sit at segregated lunch counters, rogue police could break down citizens' doors in midnight raids, and school children could not be taught about evolution.
Republicans, like then Assistant Republican Leader Alan Simpson, were stunned.
I went to him afterwards and I said, hey, pal, that was wretched excess. That was beyond belief.
But Kennedy's speech did what he wanted it to. Former Kennedy staffer Jeff Blattner.
Tactically, the speech was intended to, in essence, freeze the debate, to alert people in the country that this was going to be a matter of huge controversy, and to give senators a reason to think twice before saying something favorable about Judge Bork.
In the weeks that followed, Kennedy would use that pause he created to mobilize grassroots activists, Democratic contributors, everyone from African-American ministers to labor leaders. During the August recess on Cape Cod, he worked the phones constantly, immersed himself in Bork's writings, and bombarded his staff with requests for additional information. As usual, he brought in teams of experts for discussions, and he did something quite unusual. He got his staff to compile a book of some of what he considered Bork's most extreme writings and speeches. Then he personally delivered the book to about 15 key senators and asked them to read it. Republicans saw Kennedy's actions as a distortion of the process. They started using Bork as a verb, to be borked, meaning an unfair attack on someone whose ideas you disagree with, former Senator Simpson.
Ted told me later, he said, I didn't do in Bork. Bork did in Bork. And there was some truth to that.
Kennedy staffer Jeff Blattner.
I believe Senator Kennedy's feeling after the Bork nomination was defeated was that the country and the Senate had undergone a referendum on what the Constitution meant, and that important constitutional values of equality and liberty and human dignity had won.
As Blattner observes, Kennedy's battle against Bork involved no compromise.
He wasn't afraid to lose, and that's why he won. It's rare in a legislator to find someone who is both adept at forging compromise and adept at pushing the Senate to take a moral stand, even when it's an unpopular one. And it's that combination of qualities that really made him truly unique.
Nina Totenberg, NPR News, Washington.
Senator Kennedy's mother, Rose Fitzgerald Kennedy, brought her youngest son up to believe that he had to give back to the people of this country part of what had been given to him. He strayed from that path as a young man. We'll talk about that a little later. But he also taught himself in his mature years to work the Senate, to help members get enough of what they wanted to come over to his side and vote his way. Despite the fact that he was famous from the time he was a small child, he somehow lacked the ego we so often associate with politicians. Vice President Joe Biden, who served with him for many years, said, "The unique thing about Teddy was, it was never about him, it was always about you." We'll talk about that, too, in just a moment. We'll have analysis of the Kennedy legacy from our reporters. Nina Totenberg will be back. Also, our political editor, Ken Rudin, will join us, together with healthcare correspondent Julie Rovner, who's covering the debate going on now. This is a special report on the life of the late Senator Edward Kennedy. Just ahead, memories from Kennedy's colleagues and from President Obama. You're listening to NPR News. From NPR News, this is a special report on the life and legacy of Senator Edward Kennedy, who died on Tuesday night at his home with his family around him. I'm Linda Wertheimer. The morning after the senator's death, President Barack Obama appeared in front of the vacation home where he and his family are staying on the island of Martha's Vineyard. That's just across Nantucket Sound from the Kennedy compound at Hyannisport.
Over the past several years, I've had the honor to call Teddy a colleague, a counselor, and a friend. And even though we have known this day was coming for some time now, we awaited it with no small amount of dread. Since Teddy's diagnosis last year, we've seen the courage with which he battled his illness. And while these months have no doubt been difficult for him, they've also let him hear from people in every corner of our nation and from around the world just how much he meant to all of us. His fight has given us the opportunity we were denied when his brothers John and Robert were taken from us. The blessing of time to say thank you and goodbye. The outpouring of love, gratitude, and fond memories to which we've all borne witness is a testament to the way this singular figure in American history touched so many lives. His ideas and ideals are stamped on scores of laws and reflected in millions of lives. And seniors who know new dignity, in families that know new opportunity, in children who know education's promise, and in all who can pursue their dream in an America that is more equal and more just, including myself. The Kennedy name is synonymous with the Democratic Party, and at times Ted was the target of partisan campaign attacks. But in the United States Senate, I can think of no one who engendered greater respect or affection from members of both sides of the aisle. His seriousness of purpose was perpetually matched by humility, warmth, and good cheer. He could passionately battle others and do so peerlessly on the Senate floor for the causes that he held dear, and yet still maintain warm friendships across party lines. And that's one reason he became not only one of the greatest senators of our time, but one of the most accomplished Americans ever to serve our democracy. His extraordinary life on this earth has come to an end. An extraordinary good that he did lives on. For his family, he was a guardian. For America, he was a defender of a dream.
President Obama issued a presidential proclamation calling for flags to be lowered to half-staff and to remain that way until sunset on Sunday, the day after Senator Kennedy's burial at Arlington. After the announcement that Senator Kennedy had died, many colleagues offered their own memories of him. Here are some of the things we heard about working with Senator Kennedy.
Every day I was with him, and this is going to sound strange, but he restored my sense of idealism and my faith in the possibilities of what this country could do.
No one could question Ted Kennedy's commitment to the principles of liberalism. No one could question his commitment to fairness, to an end to discrimination, to economic justice and health care. That's a prerequisite for being an effective negotiator.
He spent the time to understand the details. And that did two things. One, it made him a formidable opponent, if you will, in the process. But two, it meant that he knew enough about it that you could get to a result.
His spirit has been there during all of these debates. And while he wasn't there to cast votes, believe me, his presence was felt during these discussions, as they will be in the coming days. For me, it's just a great loss of a great friend.
We became very dear friends. That doesn't mean we didn't fight each other. We fought each other like tooth and tongue. But afterwards, we'd throw our arms around each other and laugh about it. We passed a lot of very important legislation together, and I will greatly miss him.
We just heard from Vice President Joe Biden, Congressman Barney Frank, former New Hampshire governor and George H.W. Bush Chief of Staff John Sununu, Senator Christopher Dodd, and that last voice, Senator Orrin Hatch, remembering their friend and colleague, Senator Edward Kennedy. We're going to spend a little time now talking about Ted Kennedy's history and his legacy with some of our reporters who've covered him. We're joined now by NPR healthcare correspondent Julie Rovner, political editor Ken Rudin, and, of course, legal affairs correspondent Nina Totenberg. We just heard her review of the senator's involvement in civil rights and in battles over Supreme Court nominations. But let's start with healthcare. Julie, we've heard from so many people over the summer that the health care debate needed the considerable legislative talents that Senator Kennedy, who was, of course, too ill to participate, would bring. What do you think? Is he going to get his wish, health care for everyone? Is he going to get what he regarded as his legacy?
Well, certainly, I think the Democrats in Congress and the administration are going to do everything in their power to try and make sure that that happens. Certainly, this doesn't help. He was, of course, the 60th vote in the Senate, in the 60th Democratic vote, or with the independents who vote with the Democrats, the 60th vote. And as of now, the governor cannot appoint a successor, so there will have to be a special election. But I think that's not really where the loss will be most felt. It was, as we've been hearing throughout this hour, his skill as a negotiator in bringing people together. Senator Dodd, who spoke about Senator Kennedy early today, talked about how he hoped that perhaps the legacy of Senator Kennedy will be maybe to lower the temperature on this debate a little bit, that everyone could maybe take a deep breath and be a little bit more civil in their conversation. Whether that will happen, that may be quite wishful thinking. This debate has gotten awfully personal, awfully emotional. It may be a little bit too late to close that particular barn door. People have really taken their sides in it. It's hard to know whether there will be that, let's do this for our friend Ted, which I think is what a lot of people are perhaps hoping.
Ken, the succession situation, Senator Kennedy wrote to members of the state legislature asking them to consider some sort of special legislation that says that the governor can make an interim appointment to the Senate of someone who will not run. Obviously it was in part because of that 60th vote.
That's exactly right. Actually, the way the law stands right now, that the special election has to be held between 145 days and 160 days after a vacancy in the Senate. The governor does not have the power of appointment. Now, the governor did have the power of appointment until 2004, but back then the Democratic state legislature knew that there was a Republican governor, Mitt Romney, and a Democrat, John Kerry, running for president. Had John Kerry been elected president, Mitt Romney would have named a Republican successor, so they changed the law back in 2004, and I probably wish that it hadn't happened. But it's my understanding that the legislature, Democratic-controlled state legislature, comes back after Labor Day, and there may very well be a change in the law as early as September.
Well, it wouldn't be the first time that Massachusetts politicians acted in an expeditious way on something that they cared about.
But as Julie Robner just said, that obviously it not only a 60th vote, but to go 5 months without, with just one senator, I mean, Minnesota went through that with the Lalonde, the Coleman-Franken race, but obviously in a case like this, they want to fill that vacancy as soon as possible.
Well, now, Nina, you followed his work on other subjects, but do you think that it would have made a difference? Could he have made a difference?
Well, I think he would have made a difference because he knows the rhythms of the Senate so much, and he had such a good grasp of the politics that I don't think it would have sort of wound out of control this way without him appreciating that. We might have heard him on the Senate floor shouting just as loud as some of the shouters. Because he had such credentials with the liberal community, if there are major compromises to be made, for example, on a public option or whatever, he is the one figure who can get people to, on his side, to pay attention and listen and be believed. I heard there was one compromise that he had to sell over some piece of civil rights legislation. I stood outside the door. He was meeting with like 200 civil rights leaders, and I could hear the screaming. I couldn't hear what they were saying, but they came out of there buying the compromise, and that is the point here.
One of his biographers, Adam Clymer, I believe it was Adam Clymer, said that because of all the legislation he's helped pass, that Senator Kennedy will be, in the end, more influential. He'll have more impact on Americans and their daily lives than his brothers had. Do you think that's true?
Can I say something? One thing I was thinking about that just now as you were talking, and when we mourned Jack and Bobby, it was mostly about their potential, their unrealized potential. Ted Kennedy died at the age of 77. He was in the Senate for nearly 47 years. He accomplished tons of, passed a lot of legislation, was influential in so much legislation, and yet we're still mourning him. I guess it's part of we were talking also earlier about his redemption. There was Chappaquiddick. There was his ugly race against Jimmy Carter, his awful interview with Roger Mudd about why he couldn't articulate how he was going to run for president, the carousing he did through the 1980s in his personal life, and yet he turned that around when he stopped wanting to become president. When he stopped wanting to become a carouser, he became a legislator's legislator, and he became beloved in the process.
But there was good Ted and bad Ted along the way,
there
right?
was good Ted and bad Ted all along the way, but the Kennedys, and Ted Kennedy in particular, are positively Shakespearean in their tragedy, in their flaws, and in their greatness as well. And in the last 10, 15 years of his life, there were almost none of the
old flaws that you saw. He married. It was a happy marriage. There was none of the carousing there. And he was able to realize more legislative accomplishments. So that the redemption was complete by the end, in a way. And he passed, you know, there are all these cliches, but they're cliches for a reason. He passed the torch to the next generation, being Barack Obama. And so it is a sort of complete circle, in a way. It's a great drama.
Anna, Julie. I think one thing that really needs to be said on healthcare, you know, there's all of this obvious, you know, the one thing, and even Kennedy himself wrote in this essay for Newsweek that, you know, he really regrets so much not getting universal health care. But if you look back on his body of work on health care, and of course he chaired this key committee, he was either the chairman or the ranking member of this committee for, you know, more than two decades, the volume of work that he left behind has changed health care for so many people. He created the Community Health Centers program. He co-created the Children's Health Insurance program, the Ryan White AIDS bill. He did so much for the Food and Drug Administration, for the National Institutes of Health. Just in the last year or two, they passed the bill to have the FDA regulate tobacco, to guarantee parity in mental health coverage, to ban discrimination against people because of their genetic makeup. You know, just the list of healthcare legislation taken as an entire entity could almost be as big as passing healthcare insurance for everyone. So, you know, Nina talked in her piece about, you know, the things that he did incrementally on the civil rights forum, the way he did that on healthcare too, just doing things bit by bit by bit. The amount of healthcare,
accomplishing what you could accomplish.
The amount of healthcare legislation that Kennedy somehow was associated with is just absolutely voluminous.
Let me ask you about this ambition to be president, the fact that he was not president. Was it because of Chappaquiddick, Ken? That was the event which happened in 1969 when Mary Jo Kopechne was riding with him from a staff picnic out on Chappaquiddick, crossed a bridge, ran into the pond. He got out. She didn't.
Well, there was that.
He failed to report it. It was a very bad episode, a very bad thing.
That haunted him his whole career. And yet, interestingly enough, so many Democrats wanted him to run 3 years later. In 1972, they wanted him to run. They wanted him to run in 1976. Ironically, the time he decided to run, 1980, was against the sitting president of his own party, Jimmy Carter. And Jimmy Carter, what he had as his advantage, tragically for the rest of the country, of course, was the taking of the U.S. hostages in Iran. And President Carter was able to wrap himself almost in that crisis and say, look, I'm not campaigning. I'm not going to debate Ted Kennedy because my first and only priority is to release those hostages. And by having that on President Carter's side, Ted Kennedy almost lost a big issue. So it was a combination of Chappaquiddick and the taking of the hostages, I think, that doomed his presidential
candidacy. And the fact
candidacy.
That he almost seemed subconsciously not to want the job. Yeah. I was listening today to one of the authors of The Fall and Rise of Ted Kennedy, who pointed out that he was the ninth of nine children. He was sort of the court jester, that little was expected of him, and little was produced in the early part of his life, that he was the least equipped of the brothers to be the patriarch of the family and ended up having to be the patriarch, and that it is natural that it would take time through these terrible losses, through a marriage that was really, through no fault particularly of his own, because his wife was a serious alcoholic, was terrible. You know, he had no support system. And suddenly, he's in charge. And it almost seemed, when Roger Mudd asked him why he wanted to be president and he couldn't answer, as if he didn't really want to be president.
That was really a hard question. You know, most recently, he and his niece, Caroline Kennedy, the president's daughter, campaigned for Barack Obama. They chose Barack Obama and not Hillary Clinton, which was a controversial thing when it happened. And it made a huge difference to Barack Obama. He clearly wanted Caroline Kennedy, I think, to follow him into the Senate from New York. Now, that didn't happen.
Well,
where is that part of the legacy?
Remember when Ted Kennedy first ran for the Senate in 1962 and his opponent in the Democratic primary was Ed McCormick, the state attorney general, who said during a famous debate, if your name were Edward Moore and not Edward Moore Kennedy, your candidacy would be a joke. A lot of people felt that Caroline Kennedy, who was not outgoing, was not a natural campaigner, perhaps similar to Ted Kennedy in 1962. She suffered the same kind of Kennedy wanting to be, but never really became. And I think the problem with Caroline Kennedy is she was never really the kind of person who would set herself out as a campaigner. She did a lot of stuff behind the scenes, great, work behind the scenes, but not as a public campaigner.
It still is interesting, though, that this was like one last thing that he wanted to do, and he was not able to do it.
Well, he wasn't able to deliver Massachusetts for Barack Obama either. There are limits to legacy.
I also was very interested in, why you think, what do you think was the thing that sort of personally turned Ted Kennedy around, made him into the kind of happy warrior that we've seen over the last few years? I mean, one is tempted to say it was his second marriage to Victoria Reggie, Vicky Kennedy, wife.
It clearly was at least partly that, but Kennedy was never a dour soul. He was always a happy warrior. Even when the worst tragedies hit, it almost defies imagination to figure out how he withstood all of those tragedies. And it wasn't just the loss of his brother. It was the very serious illness of his son that he worked through. It was the death of some of his nephews and just terrible problems in this tragic ends in this family.
And somehow surviving it.
I really think he loved the Senate. I covered him for 23 years. He loved what he did. He loved being a senator. He loved legislating. I mean, you could see it every day, when he would chair a committee, chair a hearing, be on the Senate floor. It was something that he really, truly enjoyed doing.
Which his brothers did not do. Neither Jack nor Bobby were known as legislators. They were almost running for president from the beginning. Ted Kennedy, once he decided to become a legislator, became a great one.
Thank you very much. Thank all of you very much. That was Ken Rudin, who is NPR's political editor. We also have enjoyed the presence of Julie Robner, who covers healthcare for NPR, and NPR's Nina Totenberg, our correspondent who covers the Supreme Court. And we've all been talking about the life and the political career of Senator Edward Kennedy, who died today at the age of 77. In his home in Cape Cod. He will be buried on Saturday at Arlington National Cemetery. This has been a special report on the death and life of Senator Edward Kennedy. Our show was directed by Greg Dixon, edited by Stu Seidel and Beth Donovan, and produced by Evie Stone. I'm Linda Wertheimer. You're listening to NPR News.